Subway has teamed up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for $5 to participating Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See store for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. All right, welcome to the BS Report. A lot of you wondered why I didn't have today's guest on Monday. It's a great question. Fortunately, he wasn't available to be on the Subway Fresh Take hotline to discuss the Yankees sweep. Maybe that was a good thing that he wasn't available. We're going to call him right now, my buddy Jacko, diehard Yankee fan, who is like a pig in poo-poo right now. He's so happy. And I'm dreading this phone call, but we got to make it. All right.
Bill, Jacko, partners in crying, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny.
What's up, Willie? I'm so happy to hear from you, because I didn't know if you were ever going to call me again.
I'm glad you didn't answer on Monday. I unfortunately had the day off. The listeners were claiming that I was ducking you, but I really wasn't. You weren't there. You had the day off.
No, you were not. You were not ducking me. I really was not here. I knew I'd eventually get my chance to gloat, but no, it was not you. It was me.
I could have called you at home, but I don't know. You're probably still drunk from the 4 days before celebrating.
Exactly. Yeah, I just would have been just slurring my words. Right.
Well, you kind of killed the Red Sox season on Friday night, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was a big game, and the beauty of it was, although we weren't together, we were sharing it through the beauty of text message.
Yes.
So that was exciting.
Yeah, because unfortunately I had a date.
And, with your wife, I hope.
Yes, it was with my wife.
Oh,
I tried to mix it up this time. I had a date with my wife.
I was worried it was a Rick Pitino situation.
No. I paid her $3,000 after the date for her health insurance. We had a date at 8:30, which I thought was playing it safe. They, you know, given that the Yankees Red Sox, it's usually 3.5 hours for
right.
the game.
And the game started at 7 o'clock East Coast time, so that would be 4 o'clock. So you figured 4.5 hours, you're good to go.
Yeah, I figure I'm good to go. So we're sitting there, and at some point she starts to realize that. Deep in the back of my twisted head, I'm thinking that maybe we don't leave until after this game ends.
Right.
And she took a stand. And it was like the 12th inning.
Yeah.
And she just said, we're leaving. We're going on this date. And you could follow it on your BlackBerry. So then I became that guy at the restaurant.
Exactly right.
And
not even focusing on her or any conversation, just
right.
studiously, feverishly looking at your BlackBerry.
So people like you are sending me cryptic texts like, great catch, JD, or damn you, JD Drew. And I like
right.
don't even know what that means. I'm trying to interpret it. So, yeah, we almost got divorced.
I sent you one that said, like, JD blanking Drew. Only
yeah.
didn't say blanking because it was just between you and I, like the Bucky Dent thing. But, like, what the Red Sox fans still call Bucky Dent. And you were like, what? Probably, which in retrospect was a bad text to send because you probably
yeah.
thought, like, he just hit a home run to win the game.
Right.
And then you were like, what? What did he do? What did he do? And then I said he made an amazing catch to save the game, which is, you know, you were hopeful that it was a 3-run homer or something, or just a home run. But
I know. And by the way, that was an amazing catch.
That was given the situation, oh, my
yeah.
God.
Those are the hardest catches when the guy is running, like, basically right to left and has to kind of jump sideways and
right.
reach backwards and grab it. But
I did the leap off the couch and ready to jump in the air in glee and fall to my knees.
Yeah.
In agony at that one. And then I did the very same thing on the next play after Melky Cabrera's shot down the line that just went foul.
Right.
I was
yeah, there was
that one.
Tozawa gave up. I watched it on TiVo after. Tozawa gave up some freaking seeds. I don't know if he was ready for that moment. And frankly, I don't know a lot of people who would have been ready for.
No, that's a tough spot to bring him in. Although I have to say, like, he either made batters look sick and just struck them out, or they just hit rockets off of him.
Yeah.
It was either or. There was no, like, routine ground ball to second or anything.
Well, I said on I posted a tweet, I think around like the 10th inning, because it was a must-win game for the Red Sox. And I know it's like a six-month season. You can't say this game's a must-win or that game. But it really was because, you know, it just as the 0-0 kept mounting, you just kind of felt, all right, this is going to be one of those make-or-break games for the season. Then when it went into extra innings, it was clear that this had now become the make-or-break game in the season for the
right.
Red Sox.
Not only because there's a big difference between being 2.5 out or 4.5 out. Every game's a two-game swing.
Right.
But also because Beckett started, and you have to win the games that Beckett starts.
Right. Well, and also, once those innings start adding up, now you've killed your bullpen for the next game.
Right.
So if you don't get the win, and then you're going into that game or potentially even the next one with a worn-down bullpen. So anyway, it started to feel like a big one. I also feel like the Red Sox needed to win a game like that.
Yeah.
Just it had been the way the season had gone. They just weren't pulling those types of games out. And meanwhile, on the other side, the Yanks have been pulling out a few of them.
Yeah, they really have. 33 come-from-behind wins, I believe, now.
Well, you could see it with the dugouts. You could kind of see the difference. The Yankees dugout looked a lot looser to me. And, I know it's armchair analysis, but
right.
The Yankees dugout just seems looser this year, and the Red Sox dugout seems uptight.
It's nice to see every guy up on the top step in the late innings of that game, like, all ready to jump over the railing to go celebrate. I mean, they really do seem. And then I forget. I don't think it was that game. I think it was the Sabathia game on Saturday. But something happened. They scored a run, and
the guys are
in the
circle,
dancing in the dugout. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like Melky and Cano, and I forget who the third guy was. And they're doing like some sort of circle dance in the dugout. And you're like, whoa, the Yankees.
Yeah, who would have thought? They certainly weren't like that all decade.
No, they used to be like very corporate and stiff and just like robotic. And now they really have a pulse and a life. It's fantastic to see.
Well, if we learned the one thing from last week, and I think it was this, that you're better off spending $412 million on your free agents than 11.
Yeah, you don't want to be shopping in the bargain basement aisle, that's for sure. There's no question about that. That was definitively proven.
Yeah, I mean, the John Smoltz thing, which never made sense to me ever at any point, just because, forget about the 42, but just NL going to AL.
Yeah, off a shoulder injury. There's a lot wrong with that.
Somebody's got to do the definitive study of this decade, NL starters going to the AL and then vice versa, and exactly what the difference is. Because, I might be wrong. Maybe there's no difference. But it just feels to me like when the NL guy goes to the AL, it gets very dicey.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think that's been I would imagine the numbers would bear that out, I would think. I mean, it's got to. You're facing a pitcher. Your numbers are so inflated by that alone.
Yeah.
And it's the inferior quality of player for whatever reason.
It is. That's what worried me about Adrian Gonzalez. It's like he's putting these stats up in San Diego.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a little different when you're playing in front of 10,000 people in San Diego versus being in a New York, Boston.
Plus, look at the converse. Look at Matt Holliday, who is like hitting about, 250 for the A's. He goes to the Cardinals, and he's Rogers Hornsby.
I know.
And
you knew it was going to happen, though, because he's a better stadium, and he gets to hit behind Pujols. Like, obviously, he's going to do better.
The funniest thing in the world to me is now Julio Lugo is hitting, like, 450 in the National League, and he couldn't have been run out of Boston quick enough, legitimately, by the way. And now it's so funny because, I like nothing better than to listen to the Boston sports radio or read the Boston Globe comment section after the Red Sox get swept by the Yankees. Nothing
right.
gives me more joy in life, which is sad in its own way. But
yes, I agree.
And there was comments on there. A lot of people are like, I can't believe we let Lugo go. Oh, really? Like, you were the same guy that was like, I'm going to throw him off the John Hancock building, and now you're missing Julio Lugo.
Right.
Because his numbers are so inflated in the National League, That's what it's come to.
I have to say, I felt this way at the time. I was a little confused by how they handled Lugo this year. It seemed like there was more to the story. Because it's not like he was getting beaten out by
Well, they didn't have somebody breathing down his neck that was itching.
No.
Well, they figured Lowry would take the job, but then he hurt his wrist now, so.
Yeah, but here's the thing with Lowry. They took out like this bone chip out of his wrist.
Yeah.
And they said it was like the size of a golf ball, which I find hard to believe. It was size of some weird thing. And they're like, yeah, he'll be back in the middle of the season. But Jesus, how many times do we have to see in baseball where the guy has some sort of wrist issue and it takes much longer for the guy to recover than they claim it is? It's like the single worst thing you can hurt as a baseball player.
That's right.
So I don't know. I just didn't understand why they had to give up Lugo when they did. Like, why you're basically just giving him away. You're paying him to play for somebody else. Why are you doing that? Which made me think, like, Maybe he like took a crack at Terry Francona's daughter or something. I feel like there's more to the story.
Clubhouse cancer, yeah.
Or maybe he like leaked some more tea stuff to the New York Times guy, the Woodward Bernstein guy.
Maybe. Yeah, he couldn't be trusted.
I would say, like, all in all, you know, just when I thought that the weekend couldn't get any worse, because you have, like, they lose the 15-inning game, which is, like, the defining game of the season. Smoltz basically just, like, his career is just annihilated in front of everyone's eyes. And then Ortiz has the weird cryptic press conference where we're trying to figure out what tense he meant. And
yeah.
And for some reason, nobody there asking him. The questions were weird that they asked him. Like, well, how about this question? Have you ever used HGH?
Yeah, right.
It was like he said, I never buy or use steroids.
Yeah, well, have you ever injected yourself with a steroid? How about that? Have you ever used a syringe to inject it into yourself or Manny Ramirez?
Or how about I never bought or used steroids, but HGH, I take like Pez. I mean, he left. I had more questions after the press conference than I did heading into it.
And how about the questions about the guy from the Players Association, the lawyer who comes in an untucked, unbuttoned shirt with his hair all frazzled? I mean,
he looked like Nathan Thurm. I was waiting for him to have the long cigarette, long ash of the cigarette.
I mean, you're representing the Major League Baseball Players Association. It's like the most powerful sports union ever. Can you put a jacket on at least? Maybe not a tie. It's a Saturday. All right. How about a jacket? Now I'm doing Mad Dog. How about a jacket, huh?
Can you put on a bow tie?
Can you put on a suit?
Yeah, there was. It looked like he found out like 5 minutes before the press conference that he had to be there. Oh, crap, I overslept. Yeah. Like he ran out of the house.
Exactly. He must have been at the game late Friday night. It was a press conference, I think it was like about 12:30 or something, wasn't it? So
it was a typical
late morning for him.
It was your typically poorly handled MLB thing.
Yeah, definitely. And now, the whole thing was like, he's going to put the system on trial, like the whole the whole list. Well, the list really isn't the list, and we don't know what it says. Come on.
Let me ask you this one, Johnny. What happens if one of the players sues the union?
Sues the union to release the list or to...
No. They were promised in...
Oh, that it wouldn't come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
they were betrayed by the union, basically.
Well,
they were betrayed by their own union.
Yeah, they only did it because they were promised it would be kept confidential. But the thing is, I don't know how much control the union has over the list. And I mean, none of these names are supposed to be leaked, and you're violating a grand jury secrecy order.
Yeah, but it still got leaked. I mean, they were told when they did the test that nobody will ever know who your name was. It's just this is a database we're trying to compile of who did what. But we're not going to actually attach the names to whatever your test is.
Well, I don't understand why they had names attached. That's the interesting thing. Like, if they really assure anonymity, why didn't they just say, this is number 43's sample? And then you just have, number one through however many guys took it. And then you just would have a percentage that came up, but you wouldn't know whose urine was whose, just that it was positive.
But my point is, I think that's what the players were told. I think they were told, like, when you take your test, you will be player 432.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it makes me think, like,
Ortiz could
go the other way.
Nobody wants to take on the players' union, though, because then you get, you'll just be dead to the union, and you get shafted out of licensing fees and, extra money that you get. Like guys that crossed the picket line in 94, they never get any money if, their bobblehead sells or baseball cards or whatever. They don't get any of the major league licensing money.
I want Bronson Arroyo to do it. I think he's the guy because he's clearly gone off the deep end anyway.
Right.
Yeah, he's gone off the deep end anyway, so why not just go further and be like, I'm suing everybody!
That's right, it was great. Not only did I take a bunch of stuff I had no idea what it was 6 years ago, but I still do.
I know.
Days I pitch, I take an extra handful. God knows what it is.
I had a feeling at the end of that interview, Bronson Arroyo was like, wait, did you record that?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought we were just talking.
Here, right? We're just buddies talking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy.
It's going to be interesting how this next 12 months play out because I was interested in the kind of the lack of shock and disappointment. I mean, I guess I wrote about this to some degree this week, but just that the last two, Manny and Poppy, didn't get the same kind of revulsion from people that some of the other names did.
I mean, what it really goes along with, basically, and I think we've talked about this before, at least on the periphery, if it comes down to what kind of guy you are. You know, like Barry Bonds was always like a prima donna, and he was rude to his teammates, and he was rude to the press, and people were like, I really don't like that Barry Bonds. He seems unfriendly. So when it came out, it was like one more shovelful of dirt you could throw on Barry Bonds.
Right.
Like, oh, he was always a scumbag. I knew it. He's no good. And the same thing with, like, Roger Clemens. You know, Will McDonough called him the Texas con man, and he was always kind of sleazy and always claimed,
yeah.
Oh, my heart always belongs to Boston. And then, you know, he went to the highest bidder and ended up as a Yankee and what have you. So everyone was like, well, he's a scumbag anyway. So of course he did steroids.
Yeah.
Whereas Big Poppy is this big, affable, you know, cartoon figure, as I say, that people love, and he's got his mango salsa and charitable works, and it's like, oh, this big guy with this great nickname, and everybody loves him, so he did steroids, and they're like, oh, that's all right. It's Big Poppy, you know?
He's trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Exactly. Whereas, you know, Barry Bonds is like, hello, anyone over here? What do you think?
And also, I think people are now coming to grips with the fact that pretty much everyone was doing it.
Right, yeah. I mean, and the scary thing is that Jose Canseco has proven to be the most accurate, honest person in this whole thing, which is really a frightening world to live in. Think of the world we live in. But
celebrity boxer, Jose Canseco.
Exactly. When he came out years ago and said, oh, basically 75% of guys were on steroids, and people were like, no, Jose Canseco, you're crazy. Well, guess what? Turns out he wasn't so crazy.
I think it's a good idea for the MLB Network to not show any of the World Series from 1999 through 2002 anymore.
Yeah,
the 0-2-1 with it.
That's an interesting cutoff date you chose. How about through 2007?
Well, 0-3 was Marlins-Yankees, and I don't think the Marlins had enough money to afford steroids.
Oh, but Clemens pitched for the – well, they didn't. Yeah, that's true. The Yankees didn't win. I was going to say the Yankees had Clemens, but okay.
I think if you're going to go year by year, the one that – the shadiest one is the Giants-Angels.
Oh, 2002. Oh, that was the height of that was the height of it.
You go through those lineups and the starting rotations and especially like the relievers, the setup guys. And,
yeah,
I mean,
who all had career years.
Yeah, guys, they're just who had big home run totals out of nowhere. I also think we have to reevaluate that whole D-backs team.
Oh, in 01, Luis Gonzalez, etc.
There's some guys out there that don't, their names don't get really thrown in, and I'm not saying they're guilty, they're innocent, but for some reason, people concentrate on, you always hear about the Brady Anderson 50 home run year.
Oh, yes.
The Luis Gonzalez 57 home run year
was
much crazier than Brady Anderson hitting 50.
Never heard from before or again, by the way.
And there's a couple others.
Numbers like that.
I also, some of the middle infield numbers. You know, guys jumping from one homer to 15.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Very sketchy.
But, I'd love to read a book where just people go case by case. You just pick 500 guys from the last 15 years and try to figure out, if they did it or not, if the numbers make sense.
Remember that movie, 8 Men Out, about the about the Black Sox? And
I think
Studs Terkel played one of the sports writer, and I forget who the other sports writer was. One of the guys played Ring Lardner. And they were like, I'll keep like a box score. And you keep score and I'll keep score. We'll circle plays that seem a little strange because there was a rumor that it was fixed.
Yeah.
And then they like compared their things and they had the same plays circled where the guy like, oops, I dropped it,
Yeah.
So you could do the same thing now with steroids where like, I'll look at a World Series team and you do the same thing and we'll look at guys' numbers and see, we'll circle which ones kind of stand out.
I'll watch the 2002 World Series. You do too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jay Bell just hit an opposite field homer 530 feet. I think something's up.
Something looks a little hinky to me there.
By the way, I don't think it's over.
No,
that's the comical thing is like, I think a lot of these people have moved on to designer drugs that just haven't, that can't really be tested, but
look at the Olympics. The Olympics has like the most rigorous testing there is, and every time there's an Olympics, guys get their medals taken away after, or women get their medals taken away after the fact because they, it turns out they failed some test. It's because they, they made it all the way up to that point, but they have new things that, the scientists are always one step ahead of the law, so they're trying to make things that can't be discovered by regular testing.
Mm.
And they're working on stuff, and then sometimes in the Olympics, you get snagged for it. So it turns out, oops, I guess the test caught up to us. Now we have to further advance science.
Yeah, I think A-Rod's at the forefront. A-Rod has like 9 scientists in a lab coming up with new designer drugs for him. By the way, can we officially start calling him Gimpy?
Yeah, his hip is not good, I know, in that game.
Wow.
On Sunday night, Posada, you see Posada yelling at him from second base because he didn't score from first on his double.
I know.
Posada got a little animated about it, and although Posada really shouldn't throw stones given that slide on Thursday night, but
I don't think he should say anything about anybody.
But his hip is not good. I mean, he does not have the same speed that he had before. couldn't score from first on that bullet from Posada. Yeah, that's definitely that could definitely rear its head at a bad time this season.
What about when he hit the game winner and then he's like kind of limped away, like it had hurt his hip? When
Well, you know what happens? You get hurt in those celebrations at home plate. You know, guys are pounding on you, jumping on your back. It's not good for the knee or the hip.
I was watching. I was watching Game 6 of the 1991 World Series, which ironically I had never seen because we were driving home from Lehigh our senior year in college when that the Kirby Puckett game, when he hit the made the catch and hit the homer to save the game.
We were driving home from that Lehigh football game then?
Yeah.
We missed
that game, and we came in, and we came back, and we came back in time for some parties or something, and people at the party were like, the game was unbelievable tonight, and we just missed it.
Oh, that's right.
But so I was watching that game. Last week, I think it was on. And when Kirby hits the homer, he touches home plate. Mm. And they all kind of mob him, but they don't do the jump up and down thing. And now that made me wonder when it started.
Well, didn't the Red Sox kind of start? Well, did the Red Sox start to throw the helmet off thing before you get to home plate?
I think the Red Sox started that, but I want to know who started the I jump on home plate, we all put our hands in, and we all jump up and down thing. Whereas I think I came up with a name for it once in a mailbag. It was called like I can't even remember what I called it.
I don't know. That's a good question when that started.
Because 91 wasn't there.
No.
So maybe it started. I feel like it started this decade. I almost feel like the 03 Red Sox were the first team that did it, but I don't want to say that for sure.
That may be accurate. That seems to ring a bell with me. They were the first to kind of, you know, mob home plate or be there waiting for the guy as he rounded. Yeah, because it used to be kind of like, the celebration used to be more kind of in the on-deck circle, I think, because, you know, the guy would cross home plate, and then the team would be coming out of the dugout, and they'd sort of meet at the point in between. But now everybody goes to home plate and is waiting there.
Well, then the other thing I wondered is, when did the long handshake line start? Because I was watching the 1976 All-Star game.
Yeah.
And the game ends, and the guy walks off. Like, nobody even, like, three people came over to the last pitcher.
Really?
Pitcher, it was like Randy Jones, the Padres. Randy's walking off. Like, one guy comes over, shake his hand. Everybody kind of scattered. It was like a bar closing for the night.
Really, yeah.
So that made me think, like, what was the first?
Things were much more subdued way back when.
They really were.
World Series things. Like, you know, 1960, they weren't welcoming Bill Mazeroski at home plate after he beat the Yankees. I'm sure it was probably like, hey, good game. All right. Hey,
yeah.
Good job.
Nice job, Bill. There's a lot of good things about those mid-70s baseball games. I was really glad Major League, the MLB Network, showed them because, first of all, the batters never stepped out of the plate. And that really should be a rule that they can make right now.
Yeah, that's why games are so much quicker. That's a large factor.
You're in the box.
Stay there.
You cannot leave the box. It's a strike if you leave the box. Unless you have something in your eye or something.
And then you don't swing. I could never understand the Nomar adjust your gloves thing, or Big Poppy spits in his hands and has to clap. And, you know, we get it. Just stay in there.
Just stay in there. Last thing about that Yankees series. Not that I want to keep bringing it up. But
oh, please. I've got time.
The sweep was one thing. Whatever. It's not like I have incredibly high hopes for this Red Sox team. It's not like I'm banking on the World Series trip and trying to figure out how am I going to get back for the World Series? Cause we're definitely going to be, I'm not in that mode.
Okay.
But the one thing I loved about this season was young Daniel Bard.
Right.
Our future closer.
That's right.
I was excited every time he came up. I really had high hopes for him. Reminded me a lot of Papelbon when he came up in either 05 or 06. I can't remember. But
yep.
When he's like, oh, this kid, I really feel good about this kid. And the Yankees basically destroyed him.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I'm really worried if he bounces back from that.
Well,
maybe he will.
The Tigers, though, I think. Didn't he pitch well the other day?
He did, but that just wasn't a good experience. Now, you could say that was a great experience for him and it'll toughen him up and all that, but I don't know. I hate seeing a chink in the armor like that.
A lot of times these closers, when you give up one home run, you're so shot then mentally, he had to get him out at that point. I'm surprised he stuck with him after he gave up the home run.
Yeah, I had some issues with that.
I mean, everybody was screaming for Okajima, right? Wasn't that what the move should have been there? Especially because Teixeira, you don't want Teixeira batting from the left side at Yankee Stadium.
Both managers were kind of shaky in that game because I thought Phil Koch, obviously,
well, yeah.
My delight,
I don't know why
Phil Koch was left in too long.
I don't know why Phil Hughes wasn't in that game. I was screaming that at my TV originally. I didn't understand Phil Koch in there either, because he's definitely susceptible to the long ball. Girardi has been like sort of reticent to bring in Phil Hughes lately. I don't know what the deal is with that, if it's like a Jabba rules thing that they're trying to limit his innings even in relief or what. But I was screaming for Phil Hughes there too.
Well, he brought him in a weird time in the Saturday game. He brought him in for one out.
Yeah. Yep.
Which I didn't totally understand. Not that I got to see the game because it was blacked out here. But
I don't understand.
I was watching.
Why did they black out? Was there a different game on? Like a West Coast game?
Yeah. We got to see the Angels.
Against who? Not that it matters. I'm just curious.
I don't even remember. You know why I don't remember? Because I wouldn't watch it. Because
right.
I like watching my own team.
No, there you go.
I don't you know, I think baseball is one of those sports that nobody... It's not like basketball where it's like, oh, I get that. I'm going to watch LeBron James. It's not like, I'm not going to be like, I'm going to sit down for this 3.5 hour Twins game because I'm really excited to see Joe Mauer's 4 at-bats. Like, it's ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, what are they thinking?
Exactly. Now that's disappointing for you.
They're pushing me towards soccer, Johnny.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they're doing. I have my 2 World Series. I don't need this. They're going to keep screwing this up. I'm just going to walk away. I'm going to go to the English Premier League.
You can go back to your love of Tottenham Hotspur, which never quite got off the ground a couple of years ago.
Well, I am.
You owe them a little more love, I think.
I'm not tied to them.
No, you're a free agent in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to watch a lot of games and I'm going to see if anybody takes for me. Because, like, for instance, Josie Altidore is on.
He's
Hull
your new
City.
Buddy.
Yeah, he's on Hull City.
What's the name of it?
Hull City. That's the Hull City Tigers.
Ah, okay.
And so they're a possibility. Liverpool, I've always kind of enjoyed. I like their uniforms. And they're on a lot. You know, ESPN might end up televising 2 games a week.
Really?
Which can be interesting. You're down on soccer.
Pretty much, yeah.
No chance?
If you were ever to go to England to go to a soccer game, though, I would petition to tag along just because I'm curious about like the whole lifestyle around soccer, that people can get that excited and that drunk and that hooliganed up, if that's a word or a phrase, for a sport that's so seemingly painful to watch, that's so boring. I guess you have to get drunk and threaten to beat somebody up because it's the only way to maintain any interest because it's so freaking slow.
See, I would argue the opposite. I think you have to reach a level, and I feel like I'm kind of getting there mentally, where it's not really about the score as much as the all the little stuff that happens during the game. And it's a lot like baseball in that respect, where it's like you might have an inning where nobody actually scores, but a lot of stuff happened in the inning.
Well,
you know
yeah.
So, but you have to reach that
something
point.
Something could happen on every pitch, though.
Well, but soccer's
soccer,
kind
of
like that,
time,
too.
90% of the game is spent at midfield with them exchanging the ball back and forth. Seemingly, to my untrained eye.
Hmm.
I mean, I understand there could be, I guess there's defense going on or marking your man or whatever, but I don't
there's
know.
There's a lot more strategy than you'd think. I'll leave it at that.
I have a short attention span. I need some action.
Well, here's the thing, though. If you have a short attention span, soccer is better than baseball because soccer, the first half's 45 minutes straight.
Yeah.
Then you have 20 minutes off, do whatever you want. Then they come back for another 45 minutes. There's 3 minutes extra time, and you're done.
Well, my wife likes soccer. She played soccer in high school. So
yeah.
We've actually, we went down to Beckham's first game, 2 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
Beckham's first game in the against the New York, New Jersey Red Bulls at Giant Stadium.
Ooh.
And it was like a full house. I mean, it was like, we had great seats too, because she works with a guy that's got some soccer ticket connections. So we had great seats, and I kept sitting there going, oh, these would be great seats for a Giants game.
You're right.
I'm like, boy, if this was Giants Redskins, it would be a great day.
Well, I think that's the issue with soccer, though. You can't just casually watch it.
You're either really in full steam
or you're not.
Now, the crowd was really into it because it was Beckham, and you'd be like, hey, look, there's David Beckham. That's pretty neat. You know, he's famous or whatever. And then we went back last year? Yeah, we went last year again to Giants Stadium to a U.S. national against Argentina.
Yeah.
And the game was okay. I think Argentina won, but it was okay. The crowd was into it, and you had a lot of people of Argentinian descent. And I liked the chanting and the singing and waving of flags. I liked that. I liked the bright colors. I sound like a child. but I did like all the pageantry of it
and
the game itself. But then we had the horrific drive home where I literally was stuck in traffic for 2 hours on the George Washington Bridge, and I almost started crying. It was like midnight. I was stuck for 2 hours in traffic, and I have to this day I vowed I will never, ever go to the George Washington Bridge again, anywhere near it. So that may have colored my opinion of the game. because I'm like, this freaking soccer game, 2 hours in traffic on the George Washington Bridge at midnight. It was a horror show.
That that's apparently the weak MLS franchise. Like, you wouldn't think, but the New York, New Jersey team, because, again, going to the Meadowlands, awful.
No, it's horrific. There's no good way to get there. And it's
there's no good way to get there. It sucks to leave.
Yeah.
And it's one thing if you went to a football Giants game.
Right, because it's football.
Yeah, because it's football and you go early, you tailgate, all that. But just to go to see the MLS team play like Kansas City.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gone.
That was fun.
I mean, except that it was Beckham and it was like a spectacle. And the place was full. So I'm like, wow, soccer. And then I see highlights on ESPN of like their next game and there was like 15 people in the stands for a non-Beckham game.
Well, they have some teams are doing really well. Like the Seattle team apparently is doing gangbusters.
Isn't the team in Kansas City? Don't they do well?
They do well.
Kansas City's like a hotbed of soccer. Who knew?
Houston does well.
L.A.? Does L.A. do all right? Well, they have Beckham.
L.A. does well. The L.A. has two teams.
So there's two teams in L.A.?
Yeah, they have
I'm aware of this.
Chivas and the Galaxy.
Oh.
They have a team that is kind of geared almost toward the whole Mexican population.
Is that Chivas? Is that like
Chivas
is that
Regal
sponsor,
or something?
Like Chivas Regal, the Scotch?
No, I don't think so.
Isn't there like a brand of Scotch, Chivas? Of course there is.
I don't think that's why it's named that.
Aren't they all named after their sponsors? Or no, maybe not.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I think that's the case with the Red Bulls.
We need to get. Yeah, that's right. They're the New York, New Jersey Red Bulls, of course. And what's LA is like the Galaxy or something, aren't they?
Yes.
I'm afraid I'm going to slip up and name like a WNBA team or something. Like the LA, what's the LA WNBA franchise?
I think they're in better shape than the WNBA,
to say the least.
Yeah. I don't think from a TV rating standpoint, I'm not sure it's been doing that great. But I think from an attendance standpoint, I think it does pretty well. Like if you're drawing, you know, 20, 25, 30,000 a game, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's solid for them.
WNBA, maybe 2,500. Not as good. Do you need to get that?
No, it's all right.
Let's talk about Mad Men.
I'm so excited. The season starts on Sunday. I'm fired up.
Season three.
I listened to your John Hamm podcast, and I was all fired up about it. I'm like, Mad Men. I didn't realize it was starting, I don't think, until I heard that podcast.
You know, Tony Kornheiser, I've only talked to a couple times. I got this message from Rideholm, his producer, saying, Kornheiser's trying to get a hold of you. And I was like, oh, I wonder what I did. And call Kornheiser, and he's just so excited that I talked to Don Draper, just wants to talk Mad Men for 20 minutes.
Everybody loves Mad Men.
I was like, we have to do this on a podcast. Like, anytime. I'll talk Mad Men anywhere.
Oh,
he loves
speaking
it.
Of Mad Men, I'm so disappointed because I read in the newspaper that Christine Hendricks is getting married in October.
Yeah.
Now, I'm married, so, you know, I'm happily married. Not that I was going to do anything, but I have to admit, I read it and I was like, damn.
I know, that is a funny dynamic when you get disappointed when other people tie the knot, even though you're married. You had no chance with anyway.
I wouldn't have a chance with her in a million years, and I've never met her. I never will meet her, and I'm like, damn, she's getting married. Oh, geez, the one that got away.
I thought the same thing.
At least we're plausible. You could actually meet her. You're in L.A.
I know John Hamm. Yeah,
you know, John Hamm. You're 1 degree of separation away.
I might be able to stop this thing.
You might be able to.
And ask him if we can maybe meet her for drinks.
We should go crash that wedding like Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson.
So all we think is, I mean, all we know about season three.
Well, he was, you know, he would not share any secrets wisely.
It's a good job by him. Yeah.
But I have read today on the internet that it's set in 1963.
Yeah. Well, we know because she has a baby, though.
The Kennedy assassination one is going to be fantastic. Not that the Kennedy assassination was good, but I just mean like the drama they'll have wrapped up around that will be a great show.
Yeah, well, I really wonder how. So when did the first one start?
The first show?
The first one was set in 1960,
I think, wasn't it?
Was it 59?
It was either 58 or 59. I believe it was 59. Yeah, it was definitely 59. And then it was late 59 because then they did the 1960 election because they were working on Richard Nixon's campaign in their ad agency. Which was 1960. Nixon,
yeah, because I had read with the creator Matthew Weiner, I don't know. I can't remember how that's pronounced. But I had thought it was they were pretty committed to the every 2 years gimmick.
So yeah, because then it was 59, and then it was 61, and now it's 63.
When I mentioned that to John Hamm in the podcast, he said, no, no, that's not necessarily true. And he tried to talk me off of it. But now it seems like we're in 1963.
I can't remember if it was season one or season two, but it was definitely 1960 because they had a show about the whole election that night.
Yeah.
When they were in the office and they were all rooting for Nixon, and it went really late because they were waiting for the returns from Illinois to come in. And, you know, Kennedy didn't win until the morning, and that's when the guy with the glasses, he cheated on his wife, and then he ended up living there in the ad agency.
Yeah, that was season one.
That was 1960.
So maybe they moved. Well, let's figure this out. So she's pregnant.
Right.
Or, I mean, so she has the baby, but she found out. Didn't she find out she was pregnant in the last episode?
The last episode, yes.
So now we. So.
But that was season one. That was 1960. So I think, and then didn't it skip ahead a little bit for season two?
So maybe we moved ahead 18 months.
I think it started in late 1959, and then it went like through 1960, the first season.
Right.
And then last season was either 1961 or 62.
If they don't do a Kennedy episode, I'm going to be really disappointed.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to do that because they would do it surrounding big events like the election of 1960 and, you know, other things on the show. So they'll definitely tie in what happened in the actual year.
When did Marilyn Monroe die?
62.
Oh, so they missed that one. What else could they do?
Oh, no, they had that one. They had that. Remember
oh, yeah, they did
the
mention
came
her. Yeah,
in
yeah.
And she was crying. And she was
you're right.
She was crying in John Slattery's office, Roger's office.
Well, what else could happen in 63 other than JFK?
You had the big, you know, the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, JFK.
Well, maybe they get a little civil rights this year.
Yeah, they got a little bit into that with the guy with the... I don't know anybody's name on the show because, you know, it's been off for a while.
That guy, the silver-haired guy.
But yeah. The guy with the beard who's like Orson Welles. Remember he had the African-American girlfriend and he went down to, like, do a freedom ride or something?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
He didn't want to. He wanted to go on some business trip to L.A., but then when he couldn't go to that, then because all the other guys were busting his chops about, like, going to be in the civil rights movement.
I think it would be cool if he made a note in his head that the last season I'm going to do is 1969.
So you mean the creator?
Yeah.
Yeah, it just covers the 60s, right.
And because the 69 was such a cool year because you had the moon. It was the year after 68, which was like the most depressing year in American history practically.
Right.
And then Woodstock as well. Maybe it ends with John Hamm and Woodstock overdosing on LSD and dying.
The thing is, he'd be so old then, and he probably would feel like this is all like passing me by, like he's a creature of the 50s more than the 60s, you know?
Or maybe his kids go to Woodstock.
That could be
it. Could his kid be old enough? Yeah, because they could be like 15, 16 at
that point. Yeah, absolutely. There you go.
They've been on one of the HD channels. They've been showing the Woodstock documentary a lot.
Yeah.
Which is like 4 hours, which is done really, it's shot really cool. Like it has like the weird split screens and, have you ever seen it?
No.
So it'll be instead of just,
I take that back. I have seen it. It was on HBO years ago, I think.
So instead of just Carlos Santana playing the guitar, it's
right.
Like Carlos Santana playing the guitar, but then there's also a shot of the crowd going on and then a close up of his fingers and.
Yeah, no, I have seen that. That is well done.
It's really kind of amazing to watch. You think like. That these people just kind of streamed down there. They had no idea what was going to happen. There's no bathrooms.
They had no way
of getting, like, if you got separated with whoever you're with, you were never going to see them again. You just kind of hope you saw them back home.
I was listening to Francesa the other day, and he had on his former high school English teacher, who was a rock DJ who taught English on the side, apparently, as a sideline. And he was doing promotions for Woodstock at the time. They played like one of his original advertisements for it. And now he's written some book, like the definitive history of Woodstock. And he said that prior to Woodstock that same summer that they had some sort of a rock music festival in Atlantic City. And they were expecting like 50,000 people and they got like 75,000. So for instance, is like, and what were they expecting for Woodstock? And he's like, they were expecting similar numbers. They sold like 70,000 tickets or something. And so they're like, well, maybe we'll have like 70,000 to 100,000 people. And then there's estimates. They think that like 400,000 to 500,000 people showed up.
Right.
So it's just, you know, imagine just, you know, you're basically set up for 100,000 at the most, and you get five times that number. And it's 1969, so you don't have like the technology and what have you that you have today. So.
They had to airlift like these doctors in.
Right.
By helicopter.
Yeah, because the whole
like,
highway system
doctors.
In New York was shut down.
And they also like you could get in without a ticket.
Yeah. Eventually they just couldn't because they just overwhelmed the t- ticket takers or the admissions booths or whatever. So it was just like take down the fence and everybody went in.
That was a crazy era. I think as the years pass and we become further removed from it, it becomes more and more crazy to me. Like just that you had like everybody was on drugs at Woodstock. And it wasn't just like, hey, let's smoke a little pot. It was like, hey, no. Here's some LSD. This guy just gave it to me.
Right. Take it.
Can you imagine just like us being at a bar being like, hey, I have some LSD.
Right.
Any interest?
And you're at a place where 500,000 people are all zonked out on LSD. And you're like wallowing around in the mud.
Wallowing around in mud.
For 3 days.
While like somehow this perfect storm of unbelievable music acts, all of whom were like for instance, the part I saw was it was Crosby, Stills, and Nash. It was the second time they'd ever performed in public.
Wow. Really? I didn't realize that.
Like, Hendrix led the show. Really, the talent that was there was amazing. It's an interesting rewatch.
And remember they tried to replicate it? Like, they did, like, a 25th anniversary one, and everybody complained because it was, like, so corporate and,
yeah.
You know, $15 water bottles, and, you know, the bands weren't anywhere close to what they were in 69, and...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just something that should be left alone, I suppose. You can't try to replicate it.
It was also the era had a lot to do with it.
Cause oh, definitely.
That was right when the Vietnam and people getting drafted. And
yeah.
So there was like an edge to it that you're really not going to get in 1994.
No.
What are going to people be upset about in 1994?
They were upset that Ross and Rachel weren't together yet as friends. Didn't have quite the same protest movement behind it.
It is crazy, though, that it's... been 40 years since Woodstock.
Yeah.
I feel like we've grown up with Woodstock, but then that made me realize, oh yeah, well, I'm going to be 40 this year, so that
exactly,
totally makes sense.
That's right. There you go.
I also, another one that I watched recently was The Right Stuff, which...
Oh, that's the best book. I love Tom Wolfe. The book is so good. It's so great. Everything he writes is great, but the movie was pretty good, too.
Well, I remember being kind of disappointed by the movie.
Yeah, people were.
When I saw it.
Didn't do great at the time.
But now it's kind of underrated.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's well done.
It's the, it's just kind of crazy that they made it. Like, it's really a great story.
Oh, yeah. When you stop and try and wrap your head around, like, the space program, it's freaking crazy.
It's a really, really good movie that I didn't really enjoy in 1995 or whatever it came out, but
no,
I enjoyed it
this
time.
No, The Right Stuff? Like, try 1983.
No, the movie I'm talking about.
Yeah, the movie The Right Stuff?
What movie am I talking about? Oh, I'm not talking about I meant the Tom Hanks movie. I'm sorry.
Apollo 13.
Apollo 13. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen The Right Stuff.
Oh, yeah. Apollo 13 was a good movie, too.
I was talking about Apollo 13.
Oh, yeah.
When I saw that in the theater, I was...
And who did you see it in the theater with?
I think I saw it with you.
That's correct.
Yeah. I think we were both disappointed.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, it did not live up to the hype as we had hoped.
I'll tell you a movie that's really dated now in a crazy, crazy way is Philadelphia.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. You watch Philadelphia, and it feels like it came out in, like, 1918. It's the homophobia and, like, you brought AIDS into our office. Like, just yeah. Crazy things nobody would ever say now. And Denzel Washington, like, just hates gays, hates them. And then the whole movie is about how he comes around and he realizes gays are real people, too.
Right.
It's kind of nuts to watch.
Yeah, different time, that's for sure.
And then, like, the symbolism, they had this party, and you probably remember this, Tom Hanks throws the costume party.
Yeah.
And him and Antonio Banderas are dressed, like, in naval outfits
Navy
or something,
suits.
Like,
yeah,
white Navy suits. And and Denzel's dancing with his wife, and he looks over, and Tom Hanks is dancing with Banderas, and they kind of have this moment. And
yes.
It's implicit, like, gays can dance, too.
Right.
It's really bad. It might be the worst Oscar movie of the last 20 years, like that, in terms of holding up.
You think Hank should have to give his Oscar back?
I'm leaning toward it, yeah. I feel like they should reassign it and give it to him for Big.
There you go.
Because he's better in Big.
You're on a Big kick now these days. I notice it comes up more frequently in your columns, or you had some tweet about it or something.
It's on all the time.
Oh, really, yeah.
And you know what? Every time I watch it, I pick more holes in it.
You make a fantastic point.
You haven't
pointed out the biggest hole, that the kid went to a fair and turned into a grown man. I think that might be a plot hole in this thing, because you know what? That can't really happen.
That's an issue. Another one that I think is underrated, and I think I wrote about this in a mailbag recently, but I didn't mention this part. Like, think about how you were when you were 13.
Yeah.
All right, now imagine you double in size.
Right.
Could you get a job and hold a 9-to-5 job at that age?
No, of course. not. Not a prayer.
Could you have held a 9 to 11 job at that age?
Probably not. No.
Could you have done anything for 2 hours consecutively?
No, God, no. Of course not.
That's kind of a hole, I think.
It's a huge hole in it. Of course not.
It's got the great thing where Robert Loggia sees him at the toy store, and they have the whole piano moment.
Yeah, they play chopsticks on the piano or whatever. Yeah.
And Robert Loggia goes, where are you in? And he's like, I'm in the computer department. He's like, computer, that's ridiculous. The next thing you know, is the executive VP of sales.
Yeah, just because he danced on a big piano.
Yeah, because he loves toys.
That's right. That's right. I don't think that company would have lasted very long with the guy making decisions like that.
But another hole was, you know, he brings Elizabeth Perkins back to his house.
Yeah.
Or his loft, I guess. And,
right.
So here's his loft. So he's got a soda machine. he's got a trampoline, and he's got a bunk bed. These are three things in his loft.
Right.
And in Elizabeth Perkins, he invites her to sleep over. She's in bed wearing his football jersey, giving him the, hey, let's go a couple rounds look.
Right.
He runs over to the bunk bed, jumps up to the top.
Right.
And goes to sleep. This somehow enchants her.
Further endears him to her, right?
Yeah, and that now she's hooked on this guy. But I was thinking, like, can you imagine her, like, talking to one of her college friends? So what's he like? Well, he's got a soda machine, a trampoline, and a bunk bed in his house. I guess you could call him boyish.
Right, right.
I was wearing his football jersey to bed with my legs spread open, hoping he'd jump on me, and he jumped on the other bed. So, yeah, it's a little confusing.
His friend's like, did you hook up? And she's like, no, he slept in the top bunk. I was in the bottom bunk.
He has this 13-year-old boy that comes over to the office and hangs out with him and plays toys with him. He's great. You'd love him.
Oh, but I think that was the thing, though, that she had, you know, she had tried the hard-bitten urban New York guy, Bill, and had been mistreated. So
yeah.
She loved his innocent sensibilities.
Then it's like, so he's going on dates with her? It's
yeah.
Like, what is this 13-year-old boy going to talk about on a date with a 30-year-old woman?
Right.
Like, what kind of conversation are they going to have?
None.
Is she going to be like, so where'd you go to college? Where'd you grow up?
Right, exactly.
Who are your friends?
Talk about anything.
Where'd you work out before? None of this stuff came up?
Right.
I have a lot of problems with
that. And he's going to be like, I want to see you with your shirt off. That's what a 13-year-old boy would be thinking, no?
Well, they kind of do. They kind of capture that correctly because she turns off the light and he turns it back on so he can look at her boobs.
Yeah, that's true.
He probably broke the record for shortest sexual encounter, though, I'm
guessing. I would think.
Might have been 1 second.
Yeah.
He might have gone 1.5.
Yeah.
Might have gone 2. All right, Yankees.
Yes. How nervous am I?
Yeah.
Like a 1?
Wow.
I'm a little nervous in the back of my mind because they're like, well, no one, they've never lost a 6.5 game lead, and let's not forget no one had ever lost a 3-0 lead either, so it's unfortunate, but that has to take a place in the back of my mind. So, but I feel pretty confident. I think they're playing well.
I'm not as confident about the Red Sox.
What's your number?
Considering we're going into Texas this weekend?
Mm.
I think it's in Texas.
Yeah, it's a big series.
Yeah, it's in Texas.
Big wild card series.
August, Texas, not a lot of great memories. It's been better in recent years, but in the older years, not as good. Texas heating up. Texas's bullpen coming together. Have you seen Feliz?
Yeah, he's good.
Have you seen his motion?
Yeah, it's weird.
It looks like he's playing soft toss, and he's throwing 100 miles an hour. I've never seen anybody pitch like that.
It's good.
But I feel like we're kind of catching them at the wrong time, maybe.
It'll be interesting, and you got Euclid suspended, so...
He's not appealing that, though?
No, he didn't appeal it because they were afraid that he would get more games or that he would miss the Yankee series. So he sat out yesterday, and he's going to serve it.
I think the guy who decides on the baseball suspensions is like some 78-year-old, completely drunk guy who's got dementia and possibly Parkinson's syndrome.
You think so?
There's
he deserved
no...
5 games, though.
Yeah, but did you see the baseball tonight? They ran this montage last night of different suspensions. It's like one guy throws at somebody's head, it's 5 games. Another time, no games. Like, there's no rhyme or reason to it.
Oh, I didn't. It's Bob Watson. Isn't he the guy?
That's who does this stuff?
I think so, yeah. He's a disciplined guy.
He's the Stu Jackson of Major League Baseball.
That's right.
That's
or
not a compliment.
Or the former Rod Thorne, yes.
How about this? How about a uniform suspension each time?
Yeah, well, that's what they should have. They should have set rules for it, but they don't want to take away the discretion, I guess.
I just think if you hit somebody in the back, that should be worth less games than if you throw at somebody's head and just miss, like, basically paralyzing the guy or knocking him unconscious or whatever. Like, that should be more games.
Definitely.
Yeah. You're with me.
I'm with you.
All right. Well, I am I'm a 9.5.
Wow. My God. This is fantastic. I'm so happy.
9.5. Well, the other thing, you know, Big Poppy, like that whole.
Yeah.
I don't know. He just seems sad to me.
It's all sullied.
No, I mean, he seems.
Yeah, he's never going to
be. He seems sad. He just has lost his mojo.
He needs a hug again, doesn't he?
Or maybe something a little more chemical.
Yeah, absolutely. He needs a hug from the DR.
All right, Johnny. Worst of luck, as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Same to you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just breaking news, which frankly cannot go unstated. This summer, Subway is teaming up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for just $5 to some of the hottest Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See the nearest Subway for details.